Welcome to Eugeria, broadcasting live from Business Radio X Studios. Eugeria is a Greek word meaning health of body and mind in aging individuals. Eugeria Radio is a weekly show celebrating the heroes that contribute to the Eugeria of our elderly and disabled population. Now joining us in the studio are your hosts, Sam Grass and Brad Culp.
Good morning. This is Brad Culp. It's May 2nd. And I've got Trevor and Sam in the studio with me this morning, and Trevor is shy again and staying away from the microphone. Ever since we did the birthday thing, he's not been talking on the microphone.
He won't even look at us now. You know that, don't you? Yeah. He's over there playing with his board.
Just being an engineer.
That's right. Good morning, Brad. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you? It's steamy out there.
Weather in Atlanta, you never know from one day to the next.
I hope this isn't a precursor of what's to come for the summer.
Who knows?
But before we get started this morning, I just want to remind our listeners that the benefit run for Friends of Disabled Adults and Children is being held at Stone Mountain this Saturday morning. It starts at 9 o'clock, and I'm going to be out there running, and Chris Brand, who's been a guest on our show, is going to be out there running, and I couldn't convince Sam to run.
That's for young men.
Thank you. And
or fools.
But I'm hoping that it's not the same steamy weather Saturday morning, but I'm afraid it's going to be.
I hope and pray that it's cool for your sake. I once ran a race, 15-mile race, and it began at 7 a.m. and it was 85 at 7 a.m. and 15 miles into it.
Yikes.
Yeah. No fun.
Well, so if you can make it out, that would be great to see you all out there. If not, go to fodac.org and donate. Find my team, Brad Culp, or sponsor Chris. But get out there an impact.
I'm sorry. We want our listeners to sponsor you. Chris is on his own.
Well, there you go.
All right.
Well, this morning we have Chris Brannon in the studio with us.
Since we've already browbeat him, right, we're going to introduce him now?
No, Chris. That was Chris Brand.
Oh, Brand. I'm sorry.
And
okay.
We have Chris Brannon, not to be confused, in the studio with us this morning. Chris is an elder law and special needs attorney with Duhon Brannon. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
How are you this morning?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you for being here with us. As we always do, we'd like to start with you just giving us a little bit of background on yourself, where you grew up, where you went to school, and how you got to be where you are today.
Okay. Well, I'm an elder law and special needs attorney. I grew up in Gwinnett County, which is obviously just a little bit north here of Atlanta. I went to undergraduate at the University of Georgia, and I went to law school at Ole Miss, or the University of Mississippi. I started my practice after I passed the bar here in Georgia with a small firm in Cumming, Georgia. And we did general transactional work. So just really traditional wills, probate, real estate work. As I was in that practice, I thought to myself while I was doing it that I wanted to be in a more specific practice area, that I wanted to have a more defined skill set that maybe other attorneys didn't have. And so my initial motivation, I guess, for getting into elder law and special needs law was a general desire to be more specific in my skill set. So when I first started practicing, I was kind of self-conscious that I thought I was extremely young looking when I first passed the bar.
You are.
And it took me a while to build up my confidence and my comfort level with clients. It's a transactional work is client based work. And I thought I dealt with a lot of older clients, and I thought when I worked with them that they were going to walk in and take one look at me and turn around and leave. But in fact, the opposite was true. The older clients that I worked with were the most appreciative, the most fun to work with, and they seemed to have no issue at all with the fact that I looked young and that I wasn't maybe quite as polished as some of the other attorneys they were looking for, or actually the middle-aged clients or the clients that were a little bit older than me, I think, that preferred to work with an older or more experienced-looking attorney. So that's generally it. I like transactional work, the planning aspect of it, the helping clients rather than suing someone or defending a lawsuit. and just generally enjoyed working with older people. So I came into contact with some of the attorneys around the Atlanta area that were doing elder and special needs law. There are a lot of attorneys out there that hold themselves out as elder law attorneys, but there's a much smaller subset that are actually doing what I consider to be elder law.
So define that, if you
okay.
would.
Elder law that, well, in plain terms, our focus is long-term care. So we help people that have long-term care needs protect their quality of life and preserve their assets. So basically, when someone, our typical client, someone comes in to see us, they usually have a husband or a wife or a mom or dad or brother or sister who has an elevated care need. It's typically presented itself in the form of oftentimes a fall in the home or some type of illness that has resulted in a hospital stay. And suddenly they're realizing, on the advice of the doctors and the social workers at the hospital, that mom or dad or brother or sister won't be returning home, or at least won't be returning home under the same living arrangements that they were under before. So they begin to, really what gets their attention is when they begin to realize what the cost that will be involved in that. So, you know, we talk about, with meeting an elevated care need, we talk about, first we talk about the providing private caregivers in the home. We also talk about, of course, assisted living facilities and independent living facilities. And finally, nursing homes. So that's kind of where our consultation begins. And we take our clients through all the legal considerations that go along with those choices. And, of course, the big question is, and the big thing that people want advice on, is how can they get some financial help with those programs? Because at $5,000 or $6,000 or $7,000 a month, even our seniors who have saved diligently and are well prepared for most scenarios that can arise with long-term care, those planning scenarios or those careful planning scenarios can kind of go out the window pretty quickly. So when we're talking about the financial side of assistance for long-term care, we're usually talking about VA benefits. So we consult with but clients and their families about potential VA benefit programs that they may be eligible for. The other big one is Medicaid. So when we're talking about the VA benefits, the VA benefits, they're a really good program for seniors that need some additional monetary benefit to help with their care. Most of the time we're talking about that in the context of an assisted living facility or somebody who's receiving care in home. If the senior has served during time of war and has limited income and limited assets, usually they can qualify for a monetary benefit that comes every month. That's actually a very beneficial program for a lot of seniors, and a lot of seniors don't even know about it. So,
one of the things that we hear about the VA benefit program in contrast to Medicaid is that there's no look back period for the transfer of assets, and you know, and that of course is a huge benefit for those that might want to pursue VA benefits and be eligible for it. What do you think is the future of that particular loophole in the benefits? I've heard differing opinions, but recently I heard someone say that they thought that particular loophole might be going away.
Well, that's kind of difficult for me to anticipate. I will say that just looking at it from the perspective of a practitioner who does a good bit of VA benefit work, looking around at the number of clients that I have where we do that type of VA planning and that type of application, and the number of other attorneys and professionals that are also beginning to do more and more of this type of work, I would say it would be tough for them to keep the rules as they are long term. We've seen them kind of close that loophole and change that rule so that you know, you cannot transfer your assets within 5 years of application. It would be my instinct, I guess, would be that we would see some kind of similar closing of that opportunity by the VA. I don't have any particular insight on that or when that might happen, but it seems to me to be headed in that direction.
What does your typical client look like? You know, I think some people might think that only the wealthy can afford an elder care attorney. Is that really the case?
Or only the wealthy need an elder care attorney. Yeah.
Okay. Well, our typical client, I would say, is a middle-class client. Naturally, in our line of work, we or in our particular area of practice, we get a lot of people that come in and see us or that need to speak with an elder law attorney that really don't have any assets or an extremely low amount of assets. And we have to be careful because a lot of our work is pro bono work because we have so many people that call us in that situation. But we really have to be careful to limit that because we have to run a business as well
as pay the electric bill.
We have to pay our bills as well. So, but no, our typical client would be a middle class senior family, I would say. A family that has somewhere in the neighborhood of $50,000 to maybe $250,000 to $300,000. That is where we can typically provide the most value. With the VA planning, as you mentioned, there is no transfer of asset penalty. So really there's no limitation on the amount of money that someone can transfer or plan with and then make a VA application. But at some point I think you get to kind of a diminishing return with that. If you have enough assets to pay for your care, and it's obviously never going to be an issue that there's going to be a shortfall there, then going through the planning ruminations and trusts and all those kind of things can kind of not be worth it, I think. But
well, and there's probably a lot of family dynamics there that are involved once you start talking about transferring assets to various family members.
Right. We have to be very, very careful. That's obviously an area of practice for us that is something we have to monitor very closely, both from the perspective of our clients' wishes and also the family dynamic, as you said.
And in that case, you may be majoring in law, but you're going to have to minor in conflict management as well.
That's right. It always kind of surprises me, but we see a lot of family disputes. I mean, my family is not that way, but and initially it surprised me how many families were this way, but you know, brothers and sisters that just don't speak to each other, don't know where each other live. They don't like each other, and they haven't liked each other since they were small children. So, when you throw the parent into the mix, and there's usually some level of diminished capacity, even if it's a small amount of diminished capacity, it's just an ethical minefield, really, for us. As attorneys, the we always have to be mindful that the parent or that the person who needs a long-term care is our client.
I was just going to ask you, who is typically the client? Who are you typically dealing with? Are you dealing directly with the senior or are you dealing with family members or is it a mix?
Well, we are typically dealing with the senior. The senior is our client. And that can be confusing or it can be kind of hard to keep in mind because a lot of times it's the son or the daughter or the niece or the nephew who contacts us first. So we have to make it clear to both the person who has called us and to the senior that the senior is our client. Right. So whenever we're talking about planning strategies or even just simple wills and powers of attorneys and advance directives, we will typically have the senior, you know, spend some time in the office with us alone, where we say, look, we know that, you know, your son or your daughter brought you here and that you love her, him or her very much and, you know, appreciate all they've done for you, but we are your attorney. and if there's anything that you want to tell us, without, you know, son or daughter in the room, now is a good time to do it. Right. And always tell us exactly what you want, not what you, what you think they want to hear. So
let me have you clarify something, because what you said in the beginning was that your primary purpose is to protect the quality of care and preserve assets. And I think there are those that might not completely understand the notion of preserving assets. You know, some people might think that's wealth management, but I don't think that's what you were talking about.
No, what I'm referring to specifically is taking a look at the assets and the income for a specific senior, or we're not limited to seniors. We also work with younger people with disabilities. And taking a look at the different benefit programs that may be there to supplement their care, and just making sure that their assets are positioned correctly, that they are aware of any benefit programs that are available to them. And really, it's a general plan, I guess, that we want to make sure that all options are considered on the financial side of things.
When you talk about having assets positioned appropriately, give me an example of what you're talking about there. Okay. And what are some of the pitfalls that a family might need to watch out for?
Okay. Well, when we're talking about positioning the assets, I guess it's less positioning, more so than just clarifying for the family what the rules are regarding certain assets. Most commonly in the nursing home context, we deal with Medicaid. And there's a lot of misinformation and a lot of misconception out there about Medicaid. The truth of Medicaid is, even though it is a program that's intended to pay for the care or the medical expenses for individuals who lack the means to pay for them themselves, in the state of Georgia, our rules do allow for some flexibility for Medicaid recipients. So, we have income and asset limits in the state of Georgia, and our income limit is $2,094 a month. If the income level is above $2,094 a month, we can utilize a qualified income trust or a Miller trust and still obtain Medicaid eligibility for someone whose income is above that cap. For assets, we have an asset cap of $2,000 for an individual and $113,560 for a married couple. So the first thing that surprises a lot of people is that second number. $113,560 is a relatively large amount of assets that a married couple can have and be on Medicaid. And those numbers only include countable assets. There are also non-countable assets. So your home place property does not count against that cap. Your IRA accounts do not count against that cap. That's something that a lot of people don't know about.
So to clarify that, you could have a couple, could have $100,000 in cash in the bank, could have two IRAs of cash value of $200,000, or up to $500,000 now, and a home worth $500,000, and they still possibly could qualify for Medicaid.
That's correct.
Also, I'm sorry, go ahead.
But that would be probably the maximum scenario that you could ever qualify somebody under Medicaid. But to answer your question, yes. And go ahead.
Well, I'm just curious, looking at, you know, the single assets versus the married assets, you know, 2,000 versus 113,000. What's the thinking there? Why is the single 2,000? And then there's this huge jump for the married couple.
Well, it is a really stark difference. The thinking behind it is, most of the time with a married couple, the scenario is that we're going to have an institutionalized spouse. That's going to be the spouse in the nursing home, and a community spouse. And the community spouse is also going to be an older, retired senior, but they still have to live. They still have the same expenses and the same day-to-day needs that they had before their husband or their wife went into the nursing home. So the thinking behind it is that it really does not benefit anyone to force the community spouse to be impoverished so that their spouse can remain on Medicaid. So the thinking there is just that there still is a spouse there who must maintain their normal style of, not even necessarily normal, but a baseline standard of living that is going to need assets and is going to need income while they're at home.
Here's another question. So with Medicaid, there is a 5-year look back period, which means that any transfers of assets have to have happened 5 years prior to the application for Medicaid. Does that also apply to a divorce situation? And so you've got a couple that maybe are high net worth and they get a divorce for whatever reason. I could conceive of somebody doing that as a strategy to impoverish the one so that they would be eligible for the Medicaid benefit, and the other spouse, who's the community spouse, continues on with her $1 million or $2 million estate.
Well, that's an interesting question. Medicaid does have the transfer of asset penalty that you mentioned. So when someone makes an application for Medicaid, they have to reveal if they've made any transfers for less than fair market value within 5 years of the application. And if they have, in fact, made those transfers, then most likely a penalty is going to be applied, and that penalty is going to be a period of time. It's going to be a number of months that they're not going to receive Medicaid eligibility. There are exceptions to the transfer of asset penalty, and one of the things that we advise commonly with our clients, if it is possible, you can return the gift, and that undoes the gift and undoes the penalty. Medicaid is not concerned with transfers between spouses, so from husband to wife or wife to husband does not incur a penalty. As to the specific question about divorce, although I have had that come up in my practice, I have not specifically counseled anyone on that issue, and I'm not aware of what the specific ruling would be from the Medicaid caseworker in that context. But if the transfer is for a purpose other than qualifying for Medicaid, then it's not a transfer of asset penalty in that scenario as well. So I've received inquiries before about divorce for the purpose of Medicaid. I have never really delved into that legal issue. One of the reasons that we don't typically see that is that the Medicaid rules are so much more liberal or beneficial for a married couple. I mean, right. For a single person, right. you're pretty much going to have to be
destitute.
Yeah, destitute. Yeah. But we haven't really. I haven't seen that area really developed very much. So
let me jump over and I'm looking at your card here, and it says elder law and special needs attorneys. Talk a little bit about the special needs portion of your practice.
Okay. Well, our practice is not limited to seniors. We also do special needs work with younger people with disabilities. So we do a lot of Medicaid work in that context as well. Medicaid is not just nursing home Medicaid. There are other Medicaid programs, including waivered programs for children and waivered programs in the community for adults who are not quite 65. So the other things that we typically do with the special needs population is helping parents plan for their estate succession, parents that have children with disabilities or special needs. It will be beneficial for them to set up a special needs trust in their will so that the property that they leave to their children, and if they have children who are going to remain disabled or in need of some kind of benefit or supplement program, doesn't interrupt their benefit program. And it's not just in the context of estate planning. We also do special needs trusts in general. If somebody is under the age of 65, then a special needs and disabled, then a special needs trust is a very unique vehicle that can enable them to transfer property into their trust account and have it also not count against their Medicaid asset cap that we talked about earlier. So
that's really an interesting point, because we have we see a lot of quote-unquote seniors that might not be 65, but that might be disabled. And we were chatting the other day about there's a transportation benefit in Gwinnett County through Gwinnett County Senior Services that's available for people that are qualified as disabled. And, you know, disabled means a variety of things. It could mean that they're on dialysis and they have to get to dialysis, but they can't get themselves there. It could mean that they're wheelchair bound. You know, there are a variety of definitions of disabled. And so what I'm hearing you say is there might be someone who's 60 years old, not yet available or not yet eligible for Medicaid or Medicare, but yet could be classified as disabled and then be eligible for this trust. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's right. If you're under the age of 65, if you've been adjudicated as disabled, you can establish a special needs trust, a D4A trust, and you can transfer property into the trust. The transfer is not penalized in the transfer of asset penalties that we discussed earlier, and along the same line of thought, that the asset itself is non-countable when you make an application for Medicaid. So, and it's also a lot of people with disabilities who have been disabled their entire life receive SSI benefits as well. So they're not countable for their SSI purposes also.
What are some definitions of disabled that might surprise some people?
Well, the most typical, in the context that we're talking about being disabled, it's a disability adjudication from the Social Security Administration. So it's the lack of ability to support oneself through work-related activities, I guess. So
potentially being wheelchair-bound,
right?
Or lack of mobility, lack of ability to drive, would that...
You know, I'm actually not an expert on what the Social Security Administration considers disabled.
Yeah.
There's a very specific subset of attorneys that handle that type of work, and Social Security disability attorneys handle those appeals.
Sure.
So we're kind of on the other side of that issue, where I'm not an expert on what the Social Security Administration considers disabled, but I know what I consider disabled among our clients, but
right.
I couldn't really answer that question.
Not to belabor the point, but the only point I'm making is that if we have listeners that are under the age of 65 that have disabilities that either have been long-term disabilities or disabilities that are just now manifesting themselves, to get it checked out, you know, to find out if they're eligible for something like that.
Sure. And it's a fantastic planning tool for someone who's under the age of 65, yeah. Particularly if you're in a situation where you're facing long-term care and that you're going to need that long-term care indefinitely. It can be a fantastic planning tool for people in that situation.
Chris, as we've had this conversation, I've listened to a couple of things about the cost of long-term care, and specifically three, and none of them are pleasant. One of them, you use your savings, and for a middle-income, middle-America type of guy that has $250,000, you're going to be burning through that in a matter of 4 or 5 years. The second, if you're a veteran and you have a limited benefit if you're a veteran. And the third is you got to get rid of everything and qualify for Medicaid. So it seems to me that none of those are very palatable to a guy like me. So my question based upon that is, in your opinion, how should a guy of my age and income, what should I do now to prepare for the cost of long-term care?
Right. Well, the first step is just to investigate it and be aware of what the potential outcomes are for you. As a basic starting point, there's three documents that we recommend everyone have in place. That is your will, an advance directive for health care, and a durable financial power of attorney. You want to make sure that your durable financial power of attorney has some specific provisions in it. A lot of the standard form financial powers of attorneys or general powers of attorneys do not have all of the authorizations or provisions that your family may need down the line if something came up for you. Of course, another option that you can consider that we advise our clients to consider is long-term care insurance as well. We don't sell long-term care insurance, but I work closely with a lot of really good financial advisors who have been able to provide really good solutions for our clients who are looking at these things from a perspective of them coming up down the line. But the majority of our clients, unfortunately, don't foresee these things happening that far in advance. So most people, you know, these are difficult issues to contemplate. And some people just don't want to take the time to consider what they need to do in those situations. So the vast majority of our clients are, the situation has already presented itself, and they need to know what can we do in a short period of time that will make this situation, you know, as good as it can possibly be for our family and for our mom or for our dad.
So our aging population, the boomers, are coming into their golden years much more technology savvy than our parents or our grandparents. What would you say to the senior that would reply, well, you know, the will, the advance directive, the power of attorney, I mean, I could just go out to LegalZoom and get that for $99.
Right. Well, there's no requirement that you have an attorney draft your will or your advance directive for healthcare or your financial power of attorney. And, you know, frankly, the advance directive for healthcare is a statutory form. It's available online. The form that we use for the advance directive for healthcare is the same one that you can Google Georgia advance directive for healthcare and print out. The value that we add is that we can guide them through that document and help them understand the choices that they're making in that document when they sign it. With the financial power of attorney, it's more important than with the advance directive for healthcare to have some specific provisions in there, because the power of attorney document only affords the specifically enumerated authorities in that document to the agent or to the person you've appointed. So one of the things that we put in our documents that won't be in most powers of attorney forms that you print out are the ability to establish or to fund trusts. And earlier in the context of the Medicaid conversation, if mom or dad's income is above the income cap, we need to establish a qualified income trust. If they're already incapacitated, then we need to look back to the power of attorney document. If it has that trust language in there, then we're in good shape. If it doesn't have that trust language in it, then we're not in as good a shape to achieve that goal at that point. And as for the will, you know, the probate process in the state of Georgia is really a relatively simple process, and you can get a will done pretty inexpensively by an attorney now, just a simple will. And a well-drafted will usually makes the process and makes the entire experience just a lot easier and a lot more efficient for the family. I have not really studied the LegalZoom product, but I can tell you that there's a, to me, there's a great risk of further expense and further inefficiency down the line from using a product like that than there is from having a professional do it on the front end. So,
yeah, and I didn't mean to pick on one particular product, but you know, there are multiple online products. But I think, you know, it's important to understand that each state has its own set of laws, and that there are certainly some areas that could turn around and bite you later on if you overlook them.
Well, that's an excellent point. So every state does have its own individual set of laws and its own forms. So if you print a blank form, financial power of attorney online, it may not match up with the Georgia form, and it may not match up with the form that we use for a Georgia will as well. So that's an excellent distinction that people should be aware of as well. So
Chris, why? Tell us. I'm not sure how long you've been specializing in elder law, but since you've been doing that, is there a particular story that you can share with us that really kind of solidified why you do what you do?
Well, the nature of what we do is basically we help people. We help every single one of our clients, basically. So it's our clients come into us usually in a confused or concerned state, and we provide information for them that, in most cases calms them down, and in some cases agitates them even more. But I think my partner, Jenny Duhon, and I both got into this practice area because we like helping people and because we want to navigate people through this stressful time and this difficult time in their life. And that's generally what we do with almost every single one of our long-term care clients. We put a plan in place that they're comfortable with, and we enable them to realize that there is going to be a way to get over this hurdle which they're facing, which is the expensive costs of long-term care. So I can't think of a specific client or a specific situation, but with all of our clients that we do long-term care planning for, we have usually the satisfaction of helping someone through what begins as a confusing and stressful time to something that they can feel comfortable with.
That's great information, great content there, Chris. We certainly appreciate it. As we start to wrap up, I'm thinking about our listening audience, and if they're like I am, they're going, wow, where do I begin? What do I do? There seems to be so much, and most of it I don't understand. So what piece of advice might you give someone who's starting to think about they're planning for the golden years of their life? Where should they begin? What advice could you give them?
Well, as a practitioner of law, my starting point, I've said this a couple times already, but I think it's crucially important that people start with the three documents that I mentioned earlier. You want to have a will that expresses your wishes for the succession of your property after you pass away. You want to have an advance directive for health care that appoints someone who can make medical decisions for you, speak to doctors on your behalf, and you want to have a financial power of attorney where you appoint an agent to handle your financial affairs for you. With a financial power of attorney, you want to make sure that the financial power of attorney gives the agent all the authority they may need to handle anything that may come up for you. And in the context of Medicaid and VA benefits, sometimes that means trusts and gift giving and some of the other things that a traditional power of attorney or a form power of attorney off the internet may not include. And other than that, I would just say educate yourself on the issues. Medicaid, VA, all these things are fluid topics as well. So they may and they probably are going to change in the years to come. So stay educated. And also, as I said, investigate whether or not a long-term care insurance policy would be beneficial for you as well.
We certainly appreciate that, Chris. For the listeners who are spurred to do so and they might want to contact you, how can they reach you?
They can contact me at my office. My direct number is 678-538-6697. And they can check out our website at www.duhonbrannon.com. That's DUHONBRANNON.com. My partner and I do a lot of community education events where we get out and speak to groups about Medicaid and VA and guardianship, and we highlight those events on a calendar on our webpage. So we encourage people to check those out and to come listen to us speak or ask us to come speak at an event they may need a speaker for. We do a blog on the site as well where I will typically either put a piece of content that I've produced that covers one of these topics on there or link to another article or resource that I find interesting as well. So
Chris, we appreciate it. We certainly want to invite you and Jenny, your partner, back, and it's a future date. We look forward to that. Thanks for being our guest today.
Hey, thank you very much.
That's it for today. We once again thank Chris for being with us, and we want to remind our listening audience that if they want to listen to a rebroadcast of today's show, they can do so at eugeriaradio.com. And in closing, if the youth of this nation is its greatest national resource, it goes without saying that the seniors of this nation, it's its greatest national treasure. Thank you and God bless.
Ujiria Radio is sponsored by Griswold Special Care and broadcast live from the Business Radio X studios.